Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Merry January 6th, everybody. I hope you had a good one. Now on with the show. So Claudine Gay, the black female president of Harvard, got fired. I mean, they say that she resigned, but she got fired. So this is another scalp for the anti-woke side. Maybe it's the pro-Israel side. You know, maybe it's Jews over the age of 40. I'm not sure. It's a mixture of all those. So, reminder, there was three college presidents that went up in front of Congress to explain why they were not kicking people off of college campuses when they were calling for Hamas to kill Israel. I mean, I exaggerate. And so the female president of MIT, she still has her job. I don't think people are going after her too hard. The female president of University of Penn, she got the boot right quick. I think she'd done something else to piss off Jews before the congressional hearing. And then the black president of Harvard was standing behind her. So basically what it looks like is just the stuff that they said in front of the Congress is not enough to get you fired. You have to have that, which pissed people off, plus some other thing. So the Pennsylvania president had some other Jewish thing, and then this Harvard one, turned out she was a serial plagiarist. And you don't go firing your first black president of Harvard after 6 months. And so for a while there, they were saying her plagiarism was just, oh, that's just duplicative writing. They came up with another word for it, which I like that word, duplicative. You know, it's not duplicative. You might think it is. But I think they finally came up with 50 instances of plagiarism. I don't know if maybe people will stop looking at this point. Because it was kind of like, oh, we found, you know, 10 cases of it. And the Harvard Corporation, we'll talk about that in a second. They're like, well, we can ignore that. And then they found 20 more. And the Harvard Corporation was like, well, we looked into this and we talked about it. And, you know, she's going to amend her papers because she never wrote a book and only wrote a couple papers. But that's the end of it. And then even more came out. And it just, whatever. The Harvard Corporation got tired of it and eventually said, you got to go. You get to keep your job as someone who's turning the kids gay as a teacher at Harvard. You just can't be president. And it was just this beautiful microcosm of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. I mean, you choose people based on diversity. You then select people who are incompetent because you have to. But this wasn't a black female physics professor at Harvard, because there ain't none of those. Because that's the kind of thing where you actually have to be right. 2 + 2 = 4. It doesn't equal whatever the hell you want it to equal. I mean, they're coming up with indigenous math and stuff to try and change that, but it's not going to work. But so they picked a black woman who's in the social sciences, you know, where it's just all opinion. And in fact, not only is social science opinion, it's all contradicted by reality opinion. So basically, you should be completely safe picking a black woman from the social sciences. Every social scientist is a liar. So, you know, so what if she's a liar? She's the same as all of them. You know, nanner nanner, you can't come and get us. We picked a diverse person. What are you going to do about it? And then of all things, she's just super into plagiarism, which unfortunately is a thing where now 2 + 2 = 4, and it doesn't equal whatever the hell you want it is. You're either a plagiarist or you're not, and she was. So now they got a white man as interim president of Harvard. I'm pretty sure they're either going to have to pick a woman or a black person, but they're really going to have to look at them because people are going to be gunning for the next president. And maybe you leave this interim white man president in for a couple years to, you know, let the thing die down. So is Harvard going to stop being so woke? I mean, the way to do it is to, you know, everyone, because it's top down, or at least it's not top down. Everyone from the bottom to the top at Harvard is woke, but you can't control the kids. You know, the 18-year-old who shows up to Harvard with purple hair, there's not much you can do about them. So the only thing you can control is starting at the top. It's like, if you want to change the FBI, you got to change the president. There is no other lever. So the UPenn president getting fired, that's a signal to college presidents. Jews are not just evil white people. They're special. You gotta be nice to them. You can't make your DEI department take care of the Jews because DEI is full of people that hate Jews. So you better create at least a parallel DEI thing for Jews. Then the Harvard president, you know, is it just the lesson, you know, be careful about the Jews? Or, because I think, you know, she was anti-white, she was anti-male. Is this a signal to colleges in America, hey, you know, quit picking woke people to be president? You need to have diversity of opinion on your college campus, not just diversity of skin color. And the answer is, it helps. It ain't going to change everything in one fell swoop, that's for sure. Not when Trump is coming in 2024. But so the Harvard president, she blamed racism. So that was amusing. A lot of articles were like, this dumbass blamed racism when she was a plagiarist. So, you know, right after George Floyd, you wouldn't have seen any headlines like that. So that's a change in America. I mean, these are right-wing outlets, but still, right-wing outlets wouldn't have said that after George Floyd. And then the question is, what about the Harvard Corporation? So, I don't know why they call it that. The Harvard Corporation says it's the oldest corporation in America, but basically it's just the board of directors for Harvard, and that's their name. And the Harvard Corporation has 12 people. One of them is the president of Harvard. The other 11 are like people who were high up in the Obama administration, people who are billionaires, people who went to Harvard and then are either incredibly rich or were incredibly powerful in the government. There's some lawyers. One of them's a Mexican from, I think, the Supreme Court of California or something. That seemed like about as far as the diversity went. I mean, they definitely got some women in there. So I think they're going to want to make the next permanent president of Harvard a female Jew. And then we'll see if any of these board of directors, Harvard Corporation people, get the boot. I will say, I was talking about how Harvard is kind of like a mutual fund with a little appendage that is the university. And I was saying, I don't think the tail wags the dog that much. But actually, looking at these, the directors of the Harvard Corporation, they're so freaking rich. A lot of them are basically like hedge fund managers. So it looks like money does talk and bullshit will possibly walk. And the Reverend Al Sharpton and Ibram X. Kendi made statements saying that the only reason the Harvard president is being fired because of racism. America's racist, if you haven't heard. I think they're like, after George Floyd, we're going to be the center of attention in America for the rest of our lives. And then, hey, why isn't my phone ringing off the hook anymore? So they're like, hey, we get to put a quote into the media and the media will repeat it for a day, like old times. You remember Al Sharpton? He got famous, I think, in the late 80s for Tawana Brawley. He was a fat preacher or whatever, pastor, in New York. And then some youngish black woman came out and said, the cops beat me up and rubbed dog shit all over my body. And she was like, see, I've got injuries and I'm covered in dog shit. And somehow Al Sharpton rode that story to being famous, even though it turned out she had covered herself in the dog shit. I like saying dog shit. Her story was dog shit. And he's one of those guys, just like, who's the weather guy? Al Roker. I think this happens to white people too, I think. Or is it just black guys? Anyways, they looked good when they were fat. And then they got famous, and they were good looking, and everyone liked them. They were a ton of fun, a bowl of Jello. And then they lost weight, and they just didn't look right, you know? You got too much skin. There's too much skin on the skeleton. And in fact, even if they had never gotten fat and lost the weight, if they'd just been normal weight the whole time, they just wouldn't have had a ton of fun. They wouldn't have been good looking. They would have never gotten anywhere. But it was kind of like, well, they're black, even though they lost the weight and the thing that was good about them is gone. Can't fire them. I think MSNBC, you know, keeps the reverend around even to this day. I don't know. Did Norm from Cheers lose weight? I'm sure it works the same for whites too. Anyways, that was amusing. But the most amusing part was when the Harvard Corporation was trying to decide if they should fire her early on, she had a famous backer, President Obama. He said, don't be firing that black lady. And they're like, oh my God, President Obama, gotta do what he says. And then the heat got turned up, and who knows? They're probably like, hey, we'll keep her, but you got to be one of the 12 with us and hang out with us. And he's like, I ain't hanging out with you. I'm Obama. Fire her. If you want to hear more on this subject, the Wednesday episode of Real Coffee with Scott Adams talks about it, starting about 25 minutes in. But I'll just summarize. So Christopher Rufo was kind of the guy who got the plagiarism thing going, the ball rolling. I believe that he knew, probably someone tipped him off, about the Harvard president doing plagiarism before he released the information. He was just waiting for a time when he could possibly, well, do the most damage. I don't think in his wildest dreams was all this going to happen. But when she got in the news because of the Palestine-Israel stuff in Congress, then he released the information. And after she got fired, he said that he got a scalp. And you don't hear about scalping much. For some reason, when I was a kid, you'd hear someone, I don't know, it just came up somehow. Maybe because there's a lot of cowboy movies, you know, on Saturday afternoons when nothing else was on. But Christopher Rufo said he got a scalp. And then some mainstream media outlet wrote an article about how that's racist, you know, colonizers scalped the Indians. And like I've heard about colonizers scalping the Indians, I guess. I mean, we didn't have the word colonizers back then. But basically, when I was a kid, Indians were the ones going around cutting off people's scalps. And then when I was older, maybe somewhere in the 90s, when you heard about it, it was white people cutting off Indian scalps. So anyways, off to Wikipedia to figure out what is the story on that. And you can, you know, they got a page on scalping, and I'm reading the first sentence or two, and they're not talking about white people doing a bunch of scalping. I'm like, oh yeah. If this was a white thing that we taught to the Indians, then that would be in the first couple sentences. And so, and the fact is, you have to go way down the article to find out the answer, which, you know, as I'm going down looking for the answer, I know what the answer is. Anyways, and the answer was the Indians started it. Although taking body parts as trophies is, you know, it's probably as old as slavery. Time immemorium. So just another one of those woke things where they're rewriting history and succeeding to a certain extent. And then Bill Ackman is a billionaire who graduated from Harvard, has a hedge fund, and he was kind of leading the charge to get the president fired and succeeding. And I think he's a pro-Israel Jew. That was his motivation. But he has since then gone on kind of an anti-DEI rampage, a mini rampage. I mean, depending, unless he succeeds. He's talking about getting the Harvard Corporation board members fired, and he wants to get the MIT lady president fired too. And he called DEI racist. I'm starting to hear people call anti-white racism racism more. I think I can just look in the mirror if I want to know how that started. I am the 100th monkey. And the Associated Press did an article on the lady getting fired for plagiarism. And what they said was conservatives have a new weapon. I mean, you know, they're saying it's a racist weapon. Like, the weapon is making diversity hires plagiarize stuff or catching them. Do they know something we don't? Is there a whole bunch more people to catch? And then Adams mentions a study where someone went and looked at oil companies' PowerPoints, I guess, that they give, for want of a better word. And after George Floyd, 2020, who knows? At some point in 2020, all the oil companies were putting ESG stuff at the beginning of their slide deck. And in 2023, they were now mentioning it still, but in the second half of the PowerPoint. And I went and read a CBS News article talking about Bill Ackman, and they mentioned DEI. I'm just going to read a little bit here. Is DEI dead? Daniel Snell, a co-founder of Arrival, a UK-based consulting firm focused on corporate leadership and culture, acknowledged the significant downturn in investment in DEI initiatives. Quote, Many, if not most, large businesses are now unwinding their DEI commitments, as well as cutting staff, departments, external budgets, and programs connected to DEI, end quote, he told CBS MoneyWatch. Google and Meta have each cut DEI-related positions, as well as planned development training for minority hires. In a survey of more than 100 global leaders of major organizations, Arrival found that DEI initiatives have fallen from executives' lists of top priorities. So that's not quite putting numbers on the phenomenon, but that's pretty close. So, yeah, DEI is down. ESG is down. I mean, I can feel it in my bones. False accusations of racism don't have the power they once did. I mean, reminder, Black Lives Matter caused the murder of over 10,000 black people. That's all that thing did. So people want to distance themselves from all sorts of bad stuff. Now a little tinfoil hat time. But no, that's not right. Some wishful thinking time. So I don't know if this is true, but Scott Adams thinks that this Harvard president being taken down is a new harbinger of things that are going to be happening because Elon Musk bought Twitter. And I don't know if that's true. And then his, Scott Adams' theory continues, now that Elon Musk has Twitter, that's made conservatives so much more powerful. But I think if it is because of Twitter going conservative, it's the mirror image of that. It's woke people were using Twitter to organize. And now that they're not as powerful, now that they're not as organized. Elon Musk bought Twitter. It became uncool for woke people to organize on Twitter. They can't find another place to organize. The black lady president of Harvard got fired. You don't hear the term cancel culture much anymore, but this Harvard president lady got canceled. Kinda. But they're keeping her on as a teacher, and she makes $900,000 a year. But I had forgotten, she's the third top 10 university in America president who got fired this year. The president of Stanford got fired for some sort of academic malfeasance. And so I don't know if this pushes the needle. I mean, like, you know, maximum wokeness was in right after George Floyd 2020. And Harvard's hiring this lady in the middle of 2023. And the Harvard Corporation said, she may have to go off into the sunset, but we still support diversity to the maximum. And there's a question. Do you have to replace this lady with another black lady so you don't look racist that way? Or do you have to replace her with a Jew so you don't look anti-Semitic? I mean, the next Harvard president is going to be chosen not on anything other than race and gender and identity. But I think what may move the needle is, so when this lady was chosen, the Harvard Corporation was like, okay, obviously you just look at genitals, you look at skin color, you make your choice. And I'm sure, you know, in every conversation that they had around that leading up to her, you know, it was just, it didn't even occur to them that you would do it any other way. And they were just making their woke choices, and, you know, America was not scrutinizing them at all. So basically shining a light on bad behavior, it probably make the behavior a little less bad. And the other thing I wonder is, so this lady was like the queen of African American studies in America. It's basically a made up field of study, made up major, so that when black people are let into colleges that are too difficult, they have something for them to go do when they drop out of the STEM field, you know, first quarter of freshman year. I won't go into it, but, you know, that's mismatch theory, where all the smart black kids that could have been engineers never become engineers because they're let into a college that's too fancy for them. And they have to downgrade their hopes and dreams instead of going to a state school and actually, you know, getting that math degree. But there's like a computer program that you run someone's paper through and it looks for plagiarism. It just searches the internet for similar sentences, I guess, as your paper. And so I hope autistic neckbeards all across the internet are now going and downloading African American studies papers and checking them for plagiarism, I guess against other African American studies and the internet in general. Like, is the queen of all that the only one who did it? I bet she isn't. Basically, check all the diversity hires. And I would say be strategic about it. Start with the diverse, you know, start with African American studies, then do all the diversity hires, then do every professor at every Ivy League university. Because if you just drop the load all at once, every professor at Harvard is a scam artist, then it's like none of them are. Maybe start with all the college presidents. That's a good place to start. And maybe eventually we can get to the reproducibility crisis in academia, which is the thing where, especially in social science, every paper and study they put out, someone goes to try and reproduce the results and make sure that what they said was correct, and then they can't reproduce the results because it wasn't correct. A guy in Commentary Magazine podcast was saying that whatever this Harvard lady's claim to fame was, it was environmental inference or something, some sort of made up horseshit. Anyways, it was found out this year that it is made up complete and utter BS. And so, you know, her claim to fame, the thing that she's been doing her whole career, creating this framework for looking at the world or whatever, is wrong. So anyways, start with plagiarism, because that's easy to prove. And then eventually you might just get around to the fact that they're all a bunch of indoctrinating liars. For a second I was thinking, this is blacks versus Jews, and Jews won. But really, this is Trump-deranged white people going to war with blacks as their weapons, and they got defeated by Jews. But I wonder if this has gotten into the black consciousness. NBC Nightly News did do a segment on it this week, and they did the classic way that the media lies. You just put the words of a liar up front and center. So they put her words that it was because of racism. It's like, you can win your political argument if you somehow tie slavery into it. It's very tempting. And then, all right, black lady, you're going to be used as our weapon against Trump, but we're going to give you $1 million a year. How do you feel about that? I mean, I'll change this to the Woke Podcast tomorrow for way less than $1 million a year. Welcome to the Pro-Woke Podcast. The Secretary of Defense is a black guy. Probably affirmative action pick. He was in the ICU for 4 days because of elective surgery, and he didn't tell the public or the president. And that's all we know as of the release of this podcast. But it kind of sounds like you might have some sort of Claudine Gay kind of situation going. I mean, elective surgery. Basically, it's like, please, Lord, please, please let him be getting transgender surgery. I realized I'm getting a little bit of Joe Biden derangement syndrome. And so I think I should do what people with Trump derangement syndrome should do. I mean, they don't do it, but what they should do, which is enjoy it. It's fun. It's fun to get outraged. But don't let it be a detriment to your life. Like, what isn't a cure but should be a cure for Trump derangement syndrome is you look back at the 4 years that Trump was president and you go, you know, did it destroy your life? Did it do anything bad to your life? You know, was it like having your dog die? No. It was fine. Other than the upsetness that you ginned up for yourself, basically it was fine. And so I look back on the 3 years of Joe Biden and, you know, if my dog died, that would be a lot worse than whatever happened because of Biden. And there's a 50-50 chance of either one of those guys winning, so may as well get ready, you know, whoever you want, get ready for the other guy. I mean, I want the FBI guys and the CIA people who rigged the 2020 election to get fired and lose their pensions. Same with the people who started a war with Russia because we didn't care how many Ukrainians got killed and if their country was utterly destroyed. But if none of those people get fired, if nothing happens because of that, then that will just be the same thing that has happened in America my whole life. It'll just be more of the same. Every year is the same. Bad people don't get what's coming to them. And, you know, in my daily life, it really doesn't affect me. And inflation, the inflation, I mean, that has affected me, but that thing's a little more complicated because Trump got the ball rolling with his COVID stimulus. So I'm going to come down from off the ledge, or if it's fun, I'm going to get back on the ledge. I had a couple interactions on Spotify this week. both talking about the gender wage gap, which I had mentioned. Chopper 22 said, "Glad you mentioned why men make more money. I'm a tanker tugger truck driver and it pays good. It's dangerous, has erratic hours, and always broaches 60 hours a week. No woman is doing this kind of work." Thanks for the comment, Chopper. Yeah, truck driving is a interesting job. I've talked about it a few times. First off, you were the coolest back in the 70s and the early 80s, smoking the bandits. Most attractive wife I ever knew was married to a trucker. That was back in the day when truckers would take speed and do one coast to the other coast all in one run and get paid for every hour, just making tons of money, working 24 hours a day. And I think trucking is in the top 10 of dangerous jobs just because traffic accidents. And then it's surprisingly hard on the body. Sitting in a truck all day long actually breaks you down. And I think if you do it for a while, every trucker can tell you about some friend or associate who died doing it. It's not like working at a daycare. And Eric said, "You've outlined some legitimate reasons why men often out-earn women. Another is, they're less motivated because, if heterosexual, they can always fall back on their spouse's income." Thanks for the comment, Eric. And being the breadwinner is interesting. Men don't care how much women make generally, but women do not like a husband that makes less than them. Which means that, you know, there's plenty of women out there who make enough money to support both, and, you know, you could have a house husband. Anyways, she doesn't want that. And it's all for biological reasons. It hits the black family hardest because, you know, basically a black woman with a job does not want a black man as a husband if he ain't got no job. And I don't have the stats, but I think black women work about as much as anyone, and then black men have a much higher unemployment rate. Merry January 6th, listeners. Where I live in Oregon, it doesn't snow very much, but it snowed the morning of January 6th. So I took a picture of myself out in the winter wonderland and put it on Facebook and said, "Merry January 6th. That was fun. And the 6th is on a Saturday, so like the mainstream media outlets that wanted to cover it, they had to cover it on the 5th because, you know, they work weekdays. It's like this thing, you know, in the public relations business, you tell your client, if they have some bad news, drop it at the end of Friday so that it has the, you know, the weekend can go by before people are asking you the tough questions. So a little bit of the impact is muted. And like Joe Biden, he gave a January 6th speech, but again, it's, I think he gave it in time for the Friday night news. I haven't watched that yet, but anyways, it's, we'll see. We'll see if they can keep up the fervor when Monday comes. And I woke up early on Friday morning and I listened to NPR Up First, their 15-minute news roundup show, and I had forgotten what day it was. And they were just going hard about threats to democracy and Trump's a racist and January 6th. I mean, they just, whatever, everything, insurrection. Let's see, what did they say? They said the phrase, storm the Capitol, they said insurrection, and then later on in the segment, they said riot. So that was interesting. I mean, to me, January 6th is a riot. It's a bad riot. A riot that wasn't actually started by Trump. A riot that he wishes didn't happen, I imagine. So they said that about the riot. And then they're like, and Trump's going to pardon all of the January 6th, I don't remember, you know, insurrectionists, whatever, criminals. I forget the word they use there. They're like, Trump's going to pardon them all. And I've been following Trump on that a little bit, and he's always, well, he doesn't say that. So when they said that he said that, I was like, my ears perked up, and I'm going to listen intently and see if, you know, is there a new quote? Have they got the goods? And the answer was, no, they don't have the goods. They have some interview with Trump where he's being wishy-washy about who he would pardon and why. Maybe like, you know, he's going to look into it, and if they deserve it, he's going to pardon them. But like I say, I had forgotten what day it was, so I was listening to this segment. It was a pretty long one. It's a 15-minute show, and they did about the opening 6 minutes, which is, that's longer than they normally do on a single topic. And so I was like, oh, this is it. Someone has flipped the switch. NPR is going to be nothing but, you know, misinformation or propaganda from now until the general election. But then I realized it was January 5th. And so I don't know. I don't know if they're going hard now or if that was just a one-off for the anniversary. I mean, NPR had been getting better. I mean, after January 6th, they got real deranged, and then they've been getting better over the last year or something. So I think they're going to get deranged again, and I was like, they are, this is it. They proved my theory. They've gotten deranged again. But in fact, that does not prove my theory. It was hard to find podcasts during the holidays. A lot of people didn't put out an episode, or they did old episodes that I didn't care about. So I decided to go and listen to some New York Times podcasts. I used to listen to them. I think they became a bunch of liars because of Black Lives Matter. And then I just couldn't tolerate constant lying, so I dropped them. And it's funny to remember, but like, I voted for Joe Biden. He was my guy. So I guess during the whole Trump presidency, either they weren't lying or it wasn't setting off my anti-lying alarm bells. And I imagine it was nothing but political lies after January 6th, but I guess I'd already dropped them because of Black Lives Matter. But they're under new management as of the middle of 2022, so I decided to give them a shot. And so I'm listening to The Daily, which is like their daily news podcast. I think maybe today, at least at some points, it is the number one podcast in the world. I think it's them, NPR, maybe some right-wing stuff like Daily Wire. That's kind of the top 10. But so, this week they had an episode about Donald Trump is making it hard for the other Republican hopefuls to win the Republican primary. Now, Joe Biden is doing the same thing. Biden controls the Democratic Party, and so they're not letting any, you know, ne'er-do-well whippersnapper come in and take it from Biden, or, you know, even be an option, you know, an alternate option. Anyway, well, he's the president, so that's how that goes. And then normally, the non-president can't control their party and make it so easy for themselves. But obviously, Trump is basically like, it's like he's the president, at least as far as Republicans are concerned. So he has a lot of control. And so he's making it hard for DeSantis to run in Nevada, stuff like that. So think of that what you will. I guess one interesting thing they say is that, unlike 2016, Donald Trump this time around has people who know what the hell they're doing so that they can do that kind of stuff. So I'm going to put in some clips here of the New York Times. But basically, they're like, Donald Trump is rigging the election.
Maggie, has anyone observed that what the Trump campaign is up to here looks and sounds a lot like maybe rigging, right? A word that Trump uses a lot, sometimes falsely, but a lot.
Yes, people are very upset about this, Michael. Among them is Ken Cuccinelli, who was a Trump administration official when Trump was president, who now supports Ron DeSantis. He used that exact word to Shane Goldmacher and Jonathan Swan and me. He said, quote, they've rigged it anywhere they thought they could pull it off.
Just when they said all that, it made my ears perk up. Made me go, oh, okay, New York Times. So someone is rigging elections in America. Look, Donald Trump is rigging the elections in America. Yeah. No, I hear you. Donald Trump. But so in America, elections are being rigged. Yeah, Donald Trump is doing it. No, I know it's Donald Trump, but let's double check this statement. In America, elections are being rigged. You just don't understand. You got to understand the context. And I think they kind of know what they're saying, that someone like me might say something like I just said there. Because the next thing I would say is, well, if Donald Trump is rigging the election by changing the, Republican primary rules in Nevada, then what do you call it when the FBI and the CIA get together with Twitter and Facebook and you know, in quotes, rig the 2020 election. Like, if what Trump is doing in Nevada is rigging, then what FBI, CIA, Twitter, Facebook did is rigging times 100. So I imagine the New York Times listener is not aware of anything I just said there, but the people who run the Daily, they're probably aware of that. So anyway, so then they say this next thing to try and cut off the fact that the 2020 election was rigged.
We should, of course, point out that everything Trump is doing within the Republican Party, rule changes, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is perfectly legal. It's just that it's very aggressive, and it clearly exploits his unusual level of power over party leadership.
So they're like, it's not rigging, it's within the letter of the law. And that's fine, I love that. Because what the, for instance, FBI did with Twitter, that is arguably unconstitutional. In other words, not within the law. So if things are legal, they're not rigging, and if they're illegal, then I'm going to fill in the blank and say, oh, that is rigging. Then the question was the FBI coercing Twitter? Because that's what it would require to make it unconstitutional. And then the only way to answer that question is have a court look at it. And I think that is, I think people are asking the Supreme Court to look at that before the election, before 2024, November. I mean, the Supreme Court may not want to blow up everything in America, the whole do they really want to blow up the deep state and, like, show that they did steal the election? I don't think they want to do that. You can't go back and take away Biden's 4 years, so kind of what's the point? And then maybe Donald Trump can, you know, get the internal emails of the FBI if he becomes president. So, you know, and he's actually competent this time around. Or the people he picks are, and they're not super competent, but working against him. But basically, the word rigged, is it on the table? It's these words that keep being used as weapons, first by one side and then the other. So fake news, that was something that the left said, and then, you know, at the same time that Donald Trump started using it, was also the time that the left-wing media started lying. And then election interference, I mean, not too long ago, that was what racist Republicans were doing to black people in the South. And now, you know, Donald Trump is saying election interference. I don't think that's gotten through to the general public yet, but anyways, that's a term that's on the table, election interference. Which side can grab it and run with it? And then, is the word rigged on the table, and which side can run with it? Okay, I finished listening to this episode of The Daily. I recommend it. You might listen to it January 2nd. It's called Trump's 2024 playbook. It's like a half hour long. For a while there, I was like, where's the Trump derangement? The last 10 minutes is pure TDS. And that's fine. I mean, as long as you can recognize Trump derangement when you hear it, then, I mean, you know, it didn't change my opinion on anything. That was fine. I was like, what does a deranged person say? I wanted to know. And really, the whole podcast, even though it's called Trump's 2024 playbook, the podcast itself is Democrats' 2024 playbook. And so I thought they'd be talking about abortion. I don't think they mentioned it once. It is thought that abortion is the thing that got Democrats to do so well in 2022. Maybe that's not considered such a rock solid fact. And the show has a man, I think he's the normal host, and then, you know, he brings on other experts. So that was the lady you probably heard in a clip. And so they're talking about, well, you know, Trump is a threat to democracy, but his plan is to accuse Biden of being a threat to democracy. And so the guy's like, well, okay, what's the evidence? Or, you know, why would Trump say that Biden is the actual threat to democracy? And I was very interested to see what they would say. And the lady expert, she did not answer. She did not answer that question. Which, in fact, did answer my question. So, you know, if you're like, the Democrats rigged the election and they're the real threat to the democracy, what do you have to say about that? The answer is change the subject, because there's no comeback. And what did they change the subject to? Trump is a racist. So I thought it was going to be all about Trump is taking away your abortions, but it looks like Trump is a racist. They're going to go with that. And I don't know. I guess if that doesn't convince people, then they don't have anything. I'm sure they'll bring abortion into it at some point. But so basically, let's assume they bring abortion into it. Then there's two pillars on why Donald Trump should not be president. And that is, he's a racist and he's taking away your abortions. And let's not talk about the threat to democracy. I mean, maybe. So I guess that's three pillars. Don't talk about democracy, abortion, and racism. And they played a clip of Trump. It's the one where he said immigrants are soiling our blood. Something about America's blood. I'm gonna have to go find a transcript or something because they played the clip. I should play it here, but he's like, something about immigrants soiling American blood. And then he goes, they're soiling our blood and our mental institutions and prisons all over the world. And it's like, what the hell does that mean? So they must be taking his quote out of context. I mean, it's this thing where Donald Trump loves to talk. You know, he goes extemporaneously, just off the top of his head, gives speech, multi-hour speeches like every day, does it year after year. So what is that? You know, let's say 2 hours a day. That'd be 700 hours of talking off the top of your head per year. And there's just a few little quotes where people are like, oh, you think Donald Trump's not a racist? Well, here are the two quotes we have that prove he's a racist. Yeah, so 700 hours a year, 2,800 hours, first presidency, plus the other 400. So that's a 5,000 hours. Out of 5,000 hours of Trump talking off the top of his head, they've got like two or three quotes. I don't know, now they got four. I mean, he doesn't give a speech every single day. So let's say out of 1,000 hours, they've got a couple of ambiguous quotes. Some of the, you know, the fine people on both sides is the most famous one. And that one is contradicted like one or two paragraphs after he says that. He's like, and I'm not talking about the racists, which they leave out. I don't know. I mean, the answer is, it doesn't matter who says what. It's all a psyop. It's an information warfare. What does the American public believe? And I think, you know, 2016 to 2020, they believed the media. And now they are not so sure. And I guess Trump said that two of the prosecutors who are going after him are black. And he said they were being racist going after him. They were being reverse racist, which is interesting. And then the New York Times people, they seem to be implying that if you think a black person is being racist against a white person, then that proves that you are racist. And it was kind of just a comment that came and went and they didn't explain. I wish they would have explained further. I don't know if they think that you can't be racist against whites, or black people can't be racist, or if it's black racism towards whites, then that doesn't count. Or they do the old power plus privilege chestnut, or maybe this is just applies when you're talking about Donald Trump. Well, hopefully Trump talks about reverse racism enough that they have to explain themselves in a future podcast. Disney's Star Wars is in the news because their female director of color gave an interview, and she said something like, it's time that a woman was in charge of the stories in a galaxy far, far away. And so some people on Twitter were like, this doesn't sound like it's going to be a good movie. And then other people on Twitter were like, you're a racist. And people found a clip of this Pakistani Canadian lady from 2015 where she said, it's good to make men uncomfortable. I enjoy making men uncomfortable. And so this is kind of like a replay of the original Captain Marvel, you know, the girl Marvel movie, where Brie Larson said at an awards show that she doesn't want to hear what a middle-aged white man has to say. And she did some other stuff. Maybe she would only give interviews to journalists who were women or of color or disabled or something. But that was the start of the anti-woke YouTuber phenomenon. Like, everyone blew up complaining about Brie Larson and basically a couple comments. But the interesting part, so basically Brie Larson's comments, this new Pakistani lady director. Very similar comments. But so that time, people on YouTube were talking about Captain Marvel. That was how I got into the whole anti-woke part of movies was, anyways, at that period in time. I think it was 2019. But the mainstream media was not aware of it. They didn't know that something was happening, especially like the trades, you know, Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter. But, you know, now we're in a, it's a new year and Disney is in trouble and even mainstream media people are aware of it. And so, you know, I went on Google News and looked for, I think, just men uncomfortable or something. Anyways, mainstream media is covering this lady's comments about making men uncomfortable. Sorry, men uncomfortable is the old quote. So there's a bunch of headlines, mainstream media, talking about how it's, you know, it's high time that Star Wars was made by a woman or something. Anyways, and the mainstream media articles are like, yeah, it is high time that a woman was put in charge. And they're giving glowing reviews, but just the headlines, you know, a lot of people don't get past the headlines. The headlines are like, someone thinks that it's time that a woman is in charge of Star Wars. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's time that a woman is in charge of Star Wars. Which I think a lot of people who don't agree with those politics will just read that headline and go, this sounds like some horse shit. I mean, that's the beauty of the anti-woke position. People are not stupid. If you just tell people what's going on, and even though you give it a big old fat woke spin, they'll be like, that ain't right, I don't like that. They'll, you know, they have their own, well, what is used to be called the normal position, you know, like people with erect penises should not go parading around girls' locker rooms, you know, anyways. But I think this is going to be one of those situations that just works itself out. You know, Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, MCU, sometimes called MCU or MC Uterus. Something like two out of the last five Marvel movies were directed by women of color, and they both just, the movies fell flat on their face, and people are not rushing to hire those women of color. And Marvel's trying to be racist against whites, but they're failing. They're making women of color look bad instead. They're like, I'm gonna get those goddamn white men, and then, oh shoot, I just made women of color look stupid. And this Pakistani lady, like, all she's done is she's made some documentaries talking about how I think women are not treated good in Islamic countries. And then she did a short film cartoon, I think, on the same theme. And then somehow she was chosen to direct a couple of the Disney Plus Ms. Marvel TV show episodes, or maybe just one of them. And that series was not really received well. Basically, by any normal criteria, she is not qualified in any way, shape, or form to be put in charge of a giant budget Star Wars movie full of special effects. Like, she doesn't know shit about any of that. So it's kind of like Disney's pushing her out the airplane door and like, I hope you grabbed your parachute before I pushed you. And I don't think we know what her movie's going to be about. It's going to star Rey, who's the girl who was the star of the last three Star Wars movies. So there's a girl in the number one spot of the movie, girl director. I think they've got a girl for the writer of the movie. I think there might be some talk about the movie having a feminist message. And then finally, the person in charge of everything Star Wars, not the director of the movies, but the executive, is Kathleen Kennedy. So a woman has been in charge of Star Wars for the last 10, 15 years when people have started to hate Star Wars. So depending, you know, it's debatable whether or not a woman has ever been in charge of Star Wars before. Let's talk war. The war in Gaza seems to be same old, same old. The question on everyone's mind, is it going to escalate? It seems like the temperature is being turned up a bit lately, but at least this week it hasn't reached a boil, hasn't spilled out to other countries in the Middle East. So maybe next week, but America's fighting the Houthis of Yemen because the Houthis are trying to blow up container ships as they go by towards the Suez Canal. And then America tries to blow them up. And an episode of the Gist podcast this week, Mike, the host, was talking about how do you pronounce it. Because sometimes you hear Houthis and sometimes you hear Houthis. And apparently there's a lot of Yemeni, people from Yemen, in New York City. Mike said 100,000. I don't know if that was an exact number or not, but just apparently tons of them. And I've heard other podcasters talk about it, and they're very nice, and they run little bodegas, little stores. But Mike wants to know how to pronounce it, so he goes to his bodega, and he asks the nice Yemeni guy, he's like, do you guys say Houthis, or do you guys say Houthis? And the guy was like, you just said the same thing twice. So he's like, okay, well, how do you say it then? And the guy said, Houthis. And that probably isn't right either. You know, it's lost in translation. I think English is one of the very few languages that has the TH sound. Like, if you don't grow up with the TH sound, once you get to a certain age, your brain will never be able to even hear that it's there. It's like Japanese can't tell the difference between L and R. That's why they say hero. And I'm sure there's tons of stuff that, you know, English speakers can't hear. You know, like when the Bushmen say, or they say, and to an American, you're like, you just said the same thing twice. And the Bushman's like, no, the first one was, you're fat. The second one was, you're ugly. And the Russia-Ukraine war, the media is calling it a stalemate now. So, like back when it was it's been a stalemate for a long time. And the media was like, Ukraine is winning. So the media basically exaggerates by one step in Ukraine's favor. So I think now that the media says it's a stalemate, that's like them saying Ukraine is losing. Maybe. And Russia's been sending a lot of missiles at Ukraine, maybe trying to soften up the northern part of the front lines in preparation for a big push. Basically this week, it's like everyone was saying, well, it's just a stalemate. Oh, and then Russia sent, you know, 100 giant missiles at Ukraine. But it's a stalemate. I'm like, well, how does those missiles fit into the stalemate? So I went and found this podcast. It's from the UK newspaper, The Telegraph. I think it's called Russia-Ukraine War or something. And it's very pro sending weapons to Ukraine. But anyways, they had the theory that Russia was trying to soften up the north. Kharkiv is the second biggest city in Ukraine after Kiev. And I think it's the one that has more of the ethnic Russians. And it's not very far from the Russian border. And early on in the war, Russia tried to take it over. And Ukraine pushed Russia back big time. Like, that was the best, one of the best. Ukraine, the best two best things that Ukraine did was they were able to drive Russia back from Kiev and Kharkiv. And that was all in 2022. But this Telegraph podcast had a guy on there, and he was talking about, you know, if the war is over soon or if it lasts a really, really long time, then the West did the right thing, you know, getting into he doesn't call it a proxy war with Russia, but, you know, the West did the right thing sending weapons to Ukraine. And if Ukraine, you know, crushingly defeats Russia, or even if Russia wins, either way, the West did the right thing. But this guy's reasoning was interesting. So, like, if Russia gets to keep all the land it has right now, even if it gets more land than it has right now, that's still Ukraine winning, because initially Russia wanted to take over the entire country. So if they get anything other than absolutely every bit of Ukraine, then that means Russia lost. And then he didn't say the number of years, but basically he was like, even if it takes 10 years, Ukraine is guaranteed to win. You know, even if Donald Trump wins and we stop sending weapons over there, Ukraine's going to win, because it's going to turn into a Afghanistan-style insurgency. Like, you know, he was talking about when Russia invaded Afghanistan and eventually had to leave. But basically the same thing happened when America invaded Afghanistan, and it's just, whatever. They're willing to die. They're willing to blow themselves up to kill you, and eventually you get tired of it. And you gotta leave, so, you know, the terrorists win. Basically, he's saying that, like, the Ukrainians will have to turn themselves into kind of guerrilla warfare, Muslim terrorist type people to get rid of Russia. I mean, obviously they won't be Muslim or anything, but anyways, that is an interesting idea. I don't know. I don't know if we might be heading towards that. It's kind of like if there was a few million Americans living in Afghanistan and then America went and attacked it, it might have gone differently. I don't know. Last week I was talking about trad wives and I re-listened to myself and I felt what I was saying wasn't clear. So I almost deleted that segment, but then the title of the episode started with trad wife. So it got a reprieve and I like the word trad. I guess this is internet slang. You know, it comes up with something interesting every once in a while. I wonder what the race and age and demographic of internet slangers is. Like in the pre-internet days, I think slang got to normal America and it came from Black America. I imagine some of that is still going on, but trad does not sound like a Black thing. Stands for traditional, as a reminder. Another new one that's going around that I was like, what the hell does that mean? Riz. You might have heard Riz. R-I-Z. I think this one's Black. I don't know. It's short for charisma. I think you can just use it straight across in a sentence. Like, do you have the Riz to be a Instagram influencer? I mean, I'm too old. Possibly too white. And I don't know if this is true, but I kind of think Riz comes from charisma. Charisma is a word, but I think it comes from Dungeons and Dragons. Like, there's six attributes in D&D. Strength, constitution, dexterity, and then intelligence, wisdom, charisma. And when I was a kid, five of those words you heard in everyday life, and then there was that sixth one that you had never heard, which was charisma. And Dungeons and Dragons, circa 1980, charisma never mattered. You know, that was like how good looking you were. I think that's how I thought of it as a kid. I guess it's also how much you can roll the dice and see if you influence someone. I think when Dungeons and Dragons got turned into video games, because Japan loved Dungeons and Dragons so much. Now let's mention that. So the country that loved D&D the most, more than America, was Japan. And Dungeons and Dragons is a set. It's a game, but it doesn't have a board. It has books, and it wasn't translated into Japanese by the company that made it. But Japanese people just lovingly translated all the books, and then I bet the books were a lot cheaper because I don't think they paid royalty fees, and so they translated every book, and they just had a whole culture of playing Dungeons and Dragons in Japan. And then that was also about the time that video games were invented. And so a lot of Dungeons & Dragons stuff got ported over to video games, which has since infected the whole planet. And I think in video games, charisma became more important. You know, you'd talk to a NPC, non-player character, and you'd be like, I want to see the king. And then they'd say yes or no based on your charisma role or something. But I was saying that people don't like trad wives because they don't like genetics based on evolution. And I feel like I just didn't belabor the point enough last episode. So you could just say genetics. I mean, genetics is always based on evolution. But basically, throughout millennia, throughout humanity, women had to raise kids. And then the kids had to get to a certain age to pass on, you know, to create their own little kids. And if you did all that, then that was a success. And that type of genetics that achieved that was favored. And, you know, this, don't blame me, but the way to get that done was women would find a strong man to take care of them. Because a woman with an infant, the infant is vulnerable and she's vulnerable, and you need someone around in a dangerous world. And that's why women are all genetically bisexual, because another woman will work in a pinch. It's not as good, but it'll work in a pinch. Whereas men are not bisexual because another man will not work in a pinch when you want to create a child and have them grow up to adulthood. I've got a harem of 10 handsome men and I still have no heir. What's going on? And basically that relationship is pretty much what we would now call internet slang, trad wife. I mean, really back in the day, there was a lot of other stuff that we don't want to go into, like polygamy and slavery and A lot of things that still led to kids that we don't allow anymore. Things that rhyme with grape. But fast forward to modern times and, you know, what do people like? I think number one is money. I mean, money is pretty sweet. You can have a house. A house that's heated in the winter and cooled with air conditioning in the summer. And you can buy all the sugary foods you want that's like a drug. You can buy the latest iPhone, which is another thing that's like a drug. You can hang out with friends and drink alcohol. Anyways, money's good for lots of stuff. I'm sure you are doing something right now that money is helping you enjoy. Besides just this podcast, which would be one thing also. But genetics that make you a powerful man who can keep a woman and a child safe, you transport that into modern times, and that basically just means you are genetically made to make money. So sweet. But if your genetics are to be a attractive young thing who can attract a powerful man, and then after you got that sorted, you can raise a child and get them to create their own little kids, that is not the genetics you really want to gather the maximum amount of money in modern society. Well, actually, sometimes those genetics work, in which case you become a trad wife, and sometimes they don't. And I guess it kind of sucks it's kind of out of your control. And, you know, don't even go into testosterone. You know, girls like look at boys and they're like, boy, that looks like fun. You know, you're hyped up and you don't even care about getting injured when you skateboard. And many other things. But back to the trad wife. Women or woke people or whoever, you know, they don't like the explanation that it's genetics. They want to hear about the 78 cents on the dollar wage gap that doesn't take into account anything like hours worked. They don't want to hear about the 95 cents on the dollar one where, oh, if you actually, you know, do you work 40 hours a week? Basically, 95 cents on the dollar wage gap means go and blame genetics. 78 cents on the dollar means go and blame the white man. And this applies to most gaps between groups of humans. Not that gap. Mind the gap, but, you know, IQ gap, wealth gap, lots of gaps. Actually, not IQ gap. That can't be a genetic gap because it just can't. No explanation needed. That one's just obvious. Actually, what was the IQ gap between men and women? I think men and women are equal up until high school. And so people are like, hey, everyone's the same. It's all wonderful. Because there's verbal and there's math. And then we're all equal in verbal and math. I think boys are worse when they're younger boys. And then at the end of high school, we're all equal. And then don't ever check it again because I think men get better at math after that. And then there is a permanent gap forever. But anyways, people want to blame other people for things that they don't like. They don't want to blame stuff that can never be changed. Well, genetics can be changed. Why is that? That's the thing I'm not sure on. Yeah, so this part I don't know. Let's try and figure this out. First off, it's genetic. Humans are genetically built to want to blame other humans for problems, not blame the world or gods. So that means that throughout human history, the humans who blamed other humans lived and passed on their DNA to their kids, and the humans that said, oh, there's nothing you can do, died. And so we're the kind of human today that blames other humans. Maybe it's because sometimes your problems are caused by other humans, and you should probably go kill them. And I guess sometimes that got you killed when you tried to kill them, and other times you went and killed all the men and took all the women for your new trad wife. I don't know. That's a theory. I'm not sure. We'll leave that one there. But yeah, so then today we got trad wives and then woke people who hate the trad wives. And it's because, well, modern society is interesting because you can go look up the wage gap. You can do an accurate study of it and find out that it ain't the white man's fault. But we also, you know, you can, whatever, we have freedom. Freedom to do what we want. So people go and blame the people they want, even though the information that they shouldn't do that is out there. I think about 2 years ago, one of my favorite podcasts was Cut the Bull. It's a anti-woke African-American show. They're not that famous, but they're kind of famous. Charles Love, one of the guys, I think he has a radio show in IRL. Wilford Rively, he does like anti-woke black crime stats, writes whole books on it. He wrote a book on hate crime hoaxes, for instance. And he gets on TV. And then the third wheel was Shamika Michelle, just this black lady who is freaking hilarious. And I think they were doing one episode a week. And then very roughly a year ago, they started doing two or three episodes a week. And that was too much for me. And then, you know, I couldn't keep up. And then I just stopped listening altogether, which is a little weird phenomenon for me. Do you, dear listener, does this happen to you? The way it happens to me more is like with TV shows. There'll be some TV show that's been out for a while, and I'll hear about it. And, you know, maybe I'll watch the 10 episodes that are out, and I'll be like, man, if I had 10 more episodes, I'd watch them all right now. I would binge them. But then, you know, you got to wait a week for each one as they come out, and then that just means I drop the show. Basically, if I just miss some, then I stop. I don't know. Netflix drops a whole season at once. Disney Plus, I think, does their thing one episode per week. I think the jury is still out on which way is better for retaining, you know, streaming subscribers. But it used to be a staple of my show that I would grab a funny clip from Shamika and put it in each week. So I'm going to do that here. And apparently she hasn't been on the show for a year or something. I know I checked in a while ago and she wasn't there. But she came back for the Christmas show.
What's new? It's not good news.
No.
Yeah, I had an uncle murdered December 3rd. So.
My God, that's your second uncle?
Yes.
Oh.
The second one. And this one was minding his own business. What we are told is that the person that killed him knocked on three other doors before he got to his, claiming that he needed help. It was 6:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning. My uncle was preparing. He does the hot breakfast ministry at church every Sunday. And so I guess the guy was upset. He wouldn't let him come in or something. I don't even know, because he's not. They arrested the guy, but he's not talking, like, to kind of fill in the gaps.
Wow. That's so sorry. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So when y'all see me go real hard on, you know, this whole black shooting black thing, he's the wind beneath my wings, because I don't want to hear that we need to be afraid of the white man. You know, we're so scared.
Oh, he wasn't white? The guy who shot him?
Right. He's black.
Assumed, but...
Blackity black.
Oh.
Yeah.
So not a funny subject matter, but she says it in a funny way. And then Wilford, he's the stat guy, and so he busts out some interracial murder stats. Going off the top of my head, he said that 94% of blacks who are murdered, the murderer is black. 86% of whites who are murdered, the murderer is white. The murder rate for whites around the world is 4 out of every 100,000. In America, it's 6 out of every 100,000. And then African Americans is 33 out of every 100,000. And I'm not sure about the 6. I think that was whites in America, but that might have been all Americans. Oh. And if you're murdered, you're most likely to be murdered by your wife, Will says. Or maybe your husband. Which is interesting. I've said that a lot, that, you know, the person who murders you is your husband. Or at least amongst white people, it's going to be your husband who kills you. But I hadn't thought about it, but it might just be your wife, too. I mean, in the rare woman-on-man murder, probably would be your wife. What other woman would care enough to do the difficult thing of killing a much larger ape? I mean, we're all great apes. And I will say about Will, I mean, I love Will, but he's like, oh, you know, blacks kill blacks and whites kill whites. 94, 86, end of story. But that's not the end of the story, because there's 5 times as many whites as blacks. I'm going to try and do the math out loud. This is ignoring Asians and Hispanics, so this ain't going to be exactly right. But 86, 94, call that 85, 95. 85 is 15 away from 100. 95 is 5 away, so 15, 5. That's 3 times. Now you account for there's 5 times as many whites, so that's 3 times 5, 15. My guess is that blacks murder whites 15 times as much as whites murder blacks. And that actually sounds low to me. I guess that's a judgment call. You can say, hey, whites murder whites, blacks murder blacks, or you can say blacks murder whites 15 times more than the reverse. My favorite stat is blacks commit violent crime against Asians 230 times more than the reverse. And none of what I said would piss Will off. He's anti-woke, he wouldn't care. Like I say, you can phrase it however you want. And the other crazy thing about Cut the Bull, I mean, I recommend the podcast, go check it out. A year, 2 years ago, they asked me to go on the show as a guest. I don't think they realized I was an absolute nobody. And then they did figure it out, and then they stopped asking me. But that was interesting. I just heard that the number one way that people get turned on to podcasts is by word of mouth. So please tell your friends and family about this podcast. Tell your crazy uncle. Tell your non-binary purple-haired niece. Tell the guys in the construction connex or at the truck stop. But the way I hear about podcasts is through other podcasts, so I'm going to recommend some. So up first, that's NPR's left-wing 15-minute news roundup. I like that. Morning Wire, that's the 15-minute Daily Wire right-wing news roundup. And then I just started listening to Newsworthy, I think all one word. And so that's, I don't know if they're trying to be a down-the-middle 15-minute news roundup. I mean, only the left-wing one is full of lies, but anyways, I still recommend all those if you're looking for 15-minute things, and they come out every day. And then if you want to know about what's going on in the world in short things, TLDR News Global. They're about 10 minutes long. They're actually a video, but it turns out my podcast player plays it exactly the same with the screen off. That's the key. And the most recent episode of that, they had a thing about Somaliland, which is the northern chunk of Somalia, which is the African country, Horn of Africa. And apparently, so just real quick, this is the 10-minute podcast made even shorter. Here we go. Somalia used to be controlled, the northern part by Britain, the southern part by Italy. They got set loose. The northern part is called Somaliland, and they've had president after president be elected and give power to the next guy. It's a beautiful place. Used to be British. The Italian place is just a real hellhole. One of the top kind of Africans in America are Somalis, because we have some sort of immigration deal with that country. They're famous for, Minneapolis has tons of Somalis. Portland, Oregon, it's kind of African. If you see an African in Portland, Oregon, they're a Somali African. And that's because we did some deal back in the day that led a bunch of them in. But Ethiopia is over there, and Ethiopia is landlocked. And so they keep trying to make deals with various countries who are on the ocean. And so they're making a deal with Somaliland and their port. And then most of the world doesn't recognize Somaliland as its own country, but they keep trying to be their own country because apparently only the southern part of Somalia is the shithole. And so they're hoping if they get Ethiopia on their side, then maybe they can be their own little country. And then, who knows, maybe all those countries will go to war and kill each other with machetes. Who knows? Here's some more content for you guys working long hours. This is from June 21. It's about guns, like the actual physical device.
Twitter handle, @religionofwoke, all one word. Woke up quick at about noon, just thought that I had to be in Compton soon. I gotta get drunk before the day begins, before my mother starts bitching about my friends. About to go, damn near went blind, young at the pad throwing up gang signs. Ran in my house and grabbed my clip with the Mac-12 on the side of my hip. He didn't really grab his clip, he grabbed his magazine. Let's talk about guns. So, pretty much any gun you got, it's going to use a magazine, not a clip. But people get it confused and they call it a clip. Now, a magazine, I think like the most famous one I can think of is like a AK-47 has like a curved magazine in the front. It kind of curves forward. Or if you're just watching any action movie, you know, and they got like a just a normal pistol, not a revolver. And they're like, you know, they'll be dropping them out of the gun. You know, it's if okay, on a pistol, it fits in the handle. And they'll be, you know, they'll be pushing a button and it'll just like fall out of the gun. And then they'll slam another one right back in there. Anyways, those are magazines. It's basically like a kind of a long box thing that holds a bunch of bullets. It's spring-loaded, so it pushes the bullets towards the top. And then the gun can use them. And then there's a thing called a clip, which is like... I think it's mostly for old-school guns. Like maybe World War One and World War Two, or maybe it's for people who are so poor they can't afford a magazine. I mean, bullets are usually cheap, you know. If a bullet costs $1 and you can kill one of your enemies, whatever, it's a heck of a deal. So I don't know, they are cheaper, but anyways, a clip is a piece of metal that just grabs the bullet at the base. So like, you know, if you have a clip full of bullets sitting on your table or whatever, you can see the bullets. Like there's nothing in the way. You can just, you know, basically just look like all the bullets are laying there, but they're held together in like a certain way with something called a clip. Whatever, you can go to Google, do an image search for clip versus magazine. But anyways, if a rapper ever says he's got a clip, I doubt it, unless he's like a collector of old firearms, which I doubt he is. A clip is not the same thing as like a belt-fed machine gun. But just imagine that, like a belt-fed machine gun, you can see all the bullets. Well, a clip is kind of like a, instead of a flexible belt, it's just like, you know, five bullets held together right there. That's a clip. What is a 12 gauge? What does gauge mean? What is 12 of them? It's a stupid thing, really. You know, it's kind of like the imperial system of measurements where you got like an eighth of an inch, and then you get 12 of those inches, you got a foot. And you get 5,280 of those feet, you got a mile. Now, I'm not going to transition into being a woman, and I'm not going to transition into using the metric system, but still, imperial is pretty silly and stupid. And so is gauge. So what's a 12 gauge? What that means is you get yourself 1 pound of lead, you divide it into 12 chunks, you make it a perfect ball shape. And now that's the diameter of the gun. After I stopped recording that last thing, I just stopped and laughed for a while, because that is a ridiculous system. Anyways, what it means is that a lower number is bigger, so that's stupid right there. Bigger numbers should be bigger. And second off, you know, a 6 gauge is not twice as big as a 12. It's just, I mean, you'd almost have to go get yourself some lead and start making perfect spheres to even know the stuff. I mean, you know, nowadays you can look it up on the internet, but... And I guess it's because of, it's from cannonball days. So, in cannonball days, they used to call them pounders. Instead of gauge, they had pounds. Pounders. So an 8-pounder would be a cannonball that's made out of iron that weighs 8 pounds. So it makes no sense. Gauge is a lead ball. A pounder is a iron ball. Anyways, I guess, you know, whatever. When you're out fighting a war and killing the enemy, you probably don't have time to come up with a good, you know, factors of 10 thing like metric. And I think, whatever. The British generally did win those wars. Okay, maybe it's not that stupid. There you go. So here's some information from a YouTube video called Firearms Facts, the 22 Confusion by YouTuber Iraq Veteran 8888. 22s are the most common ammo used in America. If you go to the store and say, give me some 22 ammo, what they're going to give you is 22 LR. LR stands for long rifle. You know, if you ever seen 22 ammo, that's it, 22 LR. And so when you shoot a bullet, what comes out the front of the gun is the bullet. The part that stays in the gun, the brass part, that's the casing, and the whole thing is called a cartridge. In .22 caliber, The word caliber means how much of an inch. So point is really 0.22 caliber, which means it's 0.22 of an inch wide diameter. But in this video, the guy he throws some calipers on a standard 22 bullet, and it's actually 0.223. Now that may sound familiar to you, because the diameter of the bullet shot by an AR-15 is exactly 0.223 of an inch. So basically, an AR-15 is 22 caliber, but the bullets are not the same at all. AR-15 has a center fire cartridge, and the 22 rifle has a rim fire cartridge. You know, and either you've seen pictures or seen them and you know exactly what I'm talking about, or else you have to go look it up. But basically, there's the cartridge is full of powder, which propels the bullet, and then there's a primer that sets off the powder. And so the rim fire, like the 22, is different from the center fire, like the AR-15. And the rim fire is called rim fire because at the base of the shell, there's a primer in the rim. It goes all the way around. And then on the AR, it's center fire. So there's a primer that's in the center of the bullet. So guns have something called a firing pin. And, you know, I think people heard of that. And that's from center fire rifles. So the firing pin is just like it's a little pointy thing that hits the back of the bullet right in the center. You know, the center fire bullet gets hit right in the center where its primer is, which sets it off. But a rimfire bullet, like a 22, it gets hit on the edge of the base. Not the center, but the edge, to set it off. And so if anyone ever told you to not dry fire a gun, which means, you know, dry fire a gun means to fire it without any ammunition in it, it's okay to dry fire a center fire gun. It doesn't hurt the firing pin, but it can damage rimfire guns, because for whatever reason, the way the thing comes in from the side and hits it, it needs to have the bullet in there to stop it. Otherwise, you can damage the gun. So in this video, I mean, they set up a line of things. It's probably like 15 or 20 bullets that all look completely and utterly different, and yet they're all 0.22 inches wide. You know, the bullet part, like the shell casing may be huge or tiny or whatever, but anyways, there's just a million of them that are 0.22 or really 0.223 wide, but they look super different. One of the cool things he shows off at the beginning is called a flowbert. I don't know where you get these suckers, but if you ever heard of like a shooting gallery, like way back, you know, maybe in the Wild West or I don't know when, 1900 or something, they had shooting galleries. They were inside, you know, a bar. And I guess you could get drunk as hell and shoot the shooting gallery. And the gun that you used, it used a flowbert, which is like a teeny tiny 22LR. Like, I'm sure if you shot someone right in the eye, they'd be dead as hell. So, they had some serious shooting galleries back in the day. And I ain't seen this since I've been on this earth, but apparently, like way back in the day, you used to go to like county fairs, and they'd have like shooting ranges there that used something called a 22 short. So the 22 long rifle is called that because there's a shorter version called a 22 short. And like that thing, people still use that. I mean, it's basically a real gun. It's like the smallest gun you can buy in a store, pretty much. It's something that shoots a 22 short. Anyways, and I guess you used to go to the county fair and whatever, win your honey a prize with a gun that you could turn around and start doing a mass shooting if you really wanted to. And somehow they didn't do it back then. Or maybe the media just never reported it. Alright, so now let's talk about the 223. This is what's used in the AR-15 and all sorts of other guns nowadays. So it's the 223 Remington originally, and they started working on it in 1957, and then they started selling it in 1963, and it was for killing varmints. And apparently today in America, you can't take your AR out and shoot like deer with it. In some states, it's not considered a big enough bullet. You know, you might just hurt the deer and not kill it in a humane manner. Even though it's, you know, the favored weapon for killing humans. But anyways, So in the 70s, over in Europe, they made a version of it called the 5.56. So basically, 223 is inches, and then you convert that to millimeters, you got 5.56. And then in 59, they started working on the M14. That's the thing that became the AR-15 and the M16. And I guess what's good about the, whatever, the ammo in an AR is that it's a small diameter bullet, but the shell casing it goes with is real big, so it has a lot of powder, so it shoots that sucker super fast. Like, basically, the smaller the bullet, the faster it goes, or the bigger the amount of powder you got, the faster it goes. So this was a real small bullet with plenty of powder. And I think they did that because if you want to go through armor or whatever, what you want is speed. You don't want a giant cannonball going real slow. You want a teeny little pinprick thing that'll go through everything real fast. And also, if you're carrying the stuff around in the jungle, you want to have small bullets so you can carry lots of bullets because they're lighter. Like, the powder doesn't weigh barely anything. It's the bullet that weighs a lot. Yeah, so anyways, that's probably enough information for now. But I will say that I got to shoot a friend's AR-15 once. We took it out on the range, and he spent a bunch of money on it. You know, he bought an AR-15 and spent a bunch of money on it to make it better. And he had some kind of scope on it. I forget what it was, but it was easy to use. Like, a lot of scopes you can't use easily. Anyways, this one was easy to use. And then he put a trigger on it that made it real... Well, I'm just gonna use the word easy. Put a scope on it that was easy and a trigger on it that was easy. And, you know, you might think scopes and triggers are always easy, but they're not. A lot of times they're very, very difficult. But anyways, he put these things on it, and all of a sudden it was just like anywhere I wanted, anything I wanted to hit. Like, you know, there's like rocks and cans and whatever down, you know, 100 yards away or whatever. And it was just like that rock, that rock, that rock, that can, rock, rock, can, and it just hit every single time. And so I did that, and I was like, ah, I see why, you know, crazy people take this out and do their mass shootings, because you just, whatever, you hit everything you're aiming at. And, you know, that's good for war, it's good for hunting. I mean, people do go hunt deer with them. That's a big, you know, that's a big argument online. Can you hunt deer with an AR? And so people go out, whatever, they get pissed off, and they go out and hunt deer with an AR specifically to show that you can. I watch videos on YouTube, and they always, like, whatever. They want to kill that deer in the first shot and have that deer not be able to walk more than, you know, one step. Otherwise, they lose the argument. So what they really do is they go hide, and, like, you know, they hide, like, a crazy good way and make sure that the deer is only, like, 20 feet away. So whatever. It's a lot more effort to kill a deer with an AR if you want to make sure you take it down with one shot. But it can be done, and then you've won your argument. Okay, thanks. I'm not a fan of guns for self-defense, but I guess it might depend on your situation. I mean, a lot of people who, you know, in quotes, use guns for self-defense or whatever, possess guns for self-defense, it's going to be like some dad in the suburbs. He's like, I'm protecting my family, and he has a gun, you know, in his whatever, in his nightstand. Now, I mean, you know, just... Like, you know, what are the stats? Well, maybe I'll talk about some stats, but forgetting about the stats, it just seems to me, if you got a gun in your nightstand, you know, are you frequently being robbed? No, you probably go your entire life, that house, whatever, you know, that house that you're in, probably go 50 to 100 years in between burglaries and 300, 500 years in between armed robberies, on average. But anyways, that's just my opinion. Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one. So I went to Quora.com. That's a good site. Very good site. Very smart site. To try and see, like, you know, are they really good for self-defense? Anyways, I ran across a question, which is not... It's not that exact question, but their question was, do guns save more lives each year than they take? Around about take. Maybe murders. Do they save more lives? Anyways... So there's a, you know, on Quora, it's not like a right-wing site, but if you talk about guns, you will get a bunch of people who love guns and are very, very smart, giving you as many numbers as they possibly can. Almost shooting you with data, you might say. But anyways, I don't know, the top five answers, I got tired of reading it, was, they all say the same thing. They're like, Okay, well, there's 30,000 gun deaths in America each year. Two-thirds are suicides, so those don't count. Which I think that's wrong already. I disagree with that part. Anyways, they're like, those suicides don't count, so there's 10,000 murders. And so now we're going to see. Do guns stop, or whatever, do guns save more than 10,000 lives per year? And so apparently there's been some studies where, and basically I think, the answer is, first off, we don't know. No one knows. But there's been some sort of studies, the CDC, and maybe somewhere from 300,000 to 3 million self-defense uses of guns happen in America each year. But this is self-reporting, so people say that. And then all the gun lovers on Quora, they're like, fine, okay, let's use the low number, the 300,000. Like, they're already throwing out the 3 million, which I think is probably just. But so 300,000 people say that they used a gun in self-defense in the past year. You know, and apparently this is where the gun is not used to kill anyone, maybe not even used to shoot anyone. It's just like basically, whatever. They brandished the gun. They showed it. They showed it, I guess, to scare off the other person or something like that. And so here's another thing that I think the people fail to notice is like, you know, you show the gun, you know, someone might show a gun to their, you know, someone they don't like. You show them a gun to make them run away. Now, is that self-defense? I mean, maybe you're going to get in a fist fight with them, and so you show a gun to make your enemy run away. Like, I don't know if that's really self-defense. Now, we don't know. We don't know what people think their self-defense action was. So that's the problem there. But I guess I just describe what I think most people's self-defense thing is. I don't think it's like you wake up in the middle of the night, you hear a sound, you get your Glock 23 out of your nightstand, you head into the kitchen, someone just broke in through the kitchen window, you point your gun at them, and they jump out the kitchen window and run away. Now, so anyways, even though I read all these stats, whatever, I'm still not convinced that they are a useful thing. But I will admit, the data is not as overwhelming to you as you might think. Like, I've heard things like, you know, guns are 100 times more likely to kill someone in the home than someone outside. And so I guess the response to that is, well, yeah, it may kill someone inside, or a gun is going to scare away 1,000 robbers and you don't shoot them. So I don't know. And I bet you don't know either. Okay, thanks for listening. And I will add, if you want to know more about guns, on May 23rd, I did a podcast, you know, kind of diving into whether or not gun control will save lives or whatever. Or you don't have to listen to it. The answer is, we're not sure. And politicians are disingenuous about everything.
Yep, that's the end of the episode. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.